Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
What are our legal obligations regarding consultation when an employee's role is being removed or restructured? What is the risk here with her being pregnant?
Always need to try and engage with the person who's off on maternity. So letting them know what's going on. Believe it or not, I have actually had a manager who said to me, well, I didn't want to stress her out while she's off on maternity leave. And I was like, okay, so writing to let her know that there's going to be consultation is going to stress her out. But when you have to write to her and tell her that you've made her redundant in her absence, not going to stress her out at all.
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Hero software and employment law consultancy services.
Maternity discrimination.
Is that what this one's called?
Yeah, the official title is Caught in the Restructure, which I think sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it could almost be an action movie, but
yeah.
Highly disappointing.
Caught in the Restructure, ultimate corporate action thriller.
Yeah, so I think this one is probably a bit of a giveaway what it's about.
Mm.
So do you want to kick off with the email?
I do, and I will. Hi, Alyssa. Thanks for the lovely warm welcome. I'm writing to seek advice regarding a situation that has arisen during an ongoing company restructure, which involves one of our employees before I joined. We have a situation where we have someone on maternity, and their role has been covered by a temporary contract as a maternity cover. The maternity cover has now also left on maternity leave. We are in redundancy consultation. The role is likely to be caught. What do we do if the role is redundant? We think we can place the original employee, but we do have to place the maternity cover. I don't know what a lot of the terminology means there, where they mean like likely to be caught and the role is redundant. Okay. I don't know what that means.
So we'll go through this one and we'll break it down because there's a lot to get through. So we've got employee who's gone off on maternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
Totally normal. Very, very standard. This company has decided to bring in someone on a fixed term contract. So for the year, a maternity cover. So they've not split the role up and got other people doing it in the business. They've specifically recruited someone to come in as maternity cover. And you see that all the time on jobs boards where people are saying 1 year, fixed term contract, maternity cover role. So the person coming in knows it's a temporary contract. They know that they're not expecting to work at this business for forever. So that's who our maternity cover is. So we've got someone who's gone off, maternity cover comes in, and we're now in the situation where during this period, our maternity cover has fallen pregnant and has also gone off on maternity leave, which means we now have employee number three coming in.
Cover of the cover.
Cover of the cover for the remainder of the maternity leave.
Wow.
And the company's in a restructure, so they're looking at, there's a redundancy situation potentially. And what they mean when they say this role is likely to be caught, they're quite early stages. It's good that they're saying it's likely to be caught. They don't know. They've not finished kind of doing the business planning.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're worried about is that this role could potentially be at risk of redundancy. So what that means and why that's kind of a stop in your tracks moment is because people who are pregnant on maternity leave or recent returners have additional protection.
Okay.
It's not impossible to make people who are pregnant on maternity leave redundant, but it's very, very high risk to do so. So say, for example, if you are a company where your premises are closing, you are removing everybody and the business is closing down, obviously you can't find another role for that person. The business is going. You can make that person redundant.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in a situation like this where it's restructure, and we're moving things around, or perhaps people are going to be doing slightly different jobs, or we're reducing headcount, the rule of thumb is that anyone who is on maternity or within that protected period has to be given priority for a role.
Right, okay.
They jump to the top of the queue.
Mm-hmm.
So really, we should be offering a role to someone who is pregnant on maternity or in that protected period.
Okay.
So if you have got employee who's off on maternity and someone who isn't, and they are competing for a new role, unless there is a very, very compelling reason otherwise, and I'd be advising against it, the person on maternity gets the job. They have specific legal protection in redundancy situations.
And that's the person who's on maternity from that
the original role?
Well, that's what the question is here, because what we have is person who's on maternity,
yeah,
whose role it is.
Yeah, yeah.
We have maternity cover, and then we have the cover for the cover.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot going on. There's layers.
There's a lot going on here.
There's
so
layers.
They all potentially have protection against redundancy.
Yeah, yeah.
But who do we prioritise for the role? What happens? And that's why, I mean, actually, the answer is relatively straightforward. We will come on to it. I can see why they've come for the advice on this one, because mm-hmm. it is a bit of an unusual situation. And the alarm bells that are going off is, well, we know we're not supposed to make people who are on maternity redundant. And now we have three of them.
What do you do?
In the same role.
Someone's
got
to be redundant, haven't they?
Well, we'll crack on to the questions and we'll find out.
Let's find out, shall we? Questions to ask as a HR department. So the first one, what are our legal obligations regarding consultation when an employee's role is being removed or restructured? What is the risk here with her being pregnant?
So we can include the role in consultation. We don't need to sort of ring fence the role and give the role additional protection in terms of away from being included as part of redundancy discussions.
Okay.
So we can consult. The first thing that we've got here is that actually we've got people who aren't in the business because they're off on maternity.
Mm-hmm.
And the first trap that people often fall into is that they will say, and this does happen, well, this person's off on maternity leave. We consulted with the cover, not with the person whose role it is. And the decisions were made in their absence. We always need to try and engage with the person who's off on maternity. So letting them know what's going on, communicating with them. And, you know, believe it or not, I have actually had a manager who said to me, well, I didn't want to stress her out while she's off on maternity leave. And I was like, okay, so writing to let her know that there's going to be consultation is going to stress her out. But when you have to write to her and tell her that you've made her redundant in her absence, not going to stress her out at all. You know, which is the better option here?
Wait,
It's definitely to get out in front of this and let them know nice and early that this consultation is going to be potentially happening. Make sure they've got all the information that everybody in the workplace has access to and that we are flexible over how and when they can attend meetings if they wish to. So that's the first thing. We have an obligation to consult. The risk is, as I've already touched on, that we are dealing with people who have additional legal protections. This is absolutely baked into our law. It's not a nice to have. If we make someone who is on maternity leave redundant, we don't give that additional protection and we give a role away to somebody else, it is maternity discrimination. It's really, really clean cut.
Been quite a famous case of that in the employment law world recently, hasn't
it? Yes.
Not going to name names.
Yes, I can't name names.
Legally, you can't name names? What do you mean?
I mean, I do keep getting in trouble with these sorts of things. yes, within our industry, we had a situation where somebody was moved into a less well-paying role.
Yeah, I mean, I'd done the numbers on this, and this was in an article, so I can't get in trouble. I think, like, the pay for their... They were BDE, weren't they? They were a salesperson. And they were initially earning, like, upwards of 80k a year, and the reallocated role was, like, 25 grand a year or something.
Yeah.
Which is not reasonable adjustments.
It's not a suitable alternative role.
That's the better term. So you do that reason, job,
yeah, suitable. You're getting there. So reasonable adjustments is a good term, but not the one we're talking about here. So when we're making potentially making somebody redundant, if we find other roles within the business, there is a legal test over whether something is a suitable alternative position.
Okay.
What that means is, if something is a suitable alternative and we offer it to them and they say no, they forfeit their redundancy. Because what we're essentially saying is, we have found a suitable role for you. It's comparable or within the percentage buffer of what's comparable. If they say no to it and say, actually, I want the redundancy payment, we can legally say, actually, the redundancy is now off the table. We found you a suitable alternative role. You don't need to compete for it. We want to slot you in.
Mm-hmm.
If that role is not a suitable alternative, so the pay cut is too great, the drop in seniority is too big, they have to add an extra hour to their commute, whatever it could be that means that it's less suitable, they can legally say no and they still get their redundancy payment.
Right, okay.
So the wording suitable alternative employment is a technical legal term. And that's what you have to be very, very careful of, is particularly where we are slotting in, because it's not just finding the role for somebody who's on maternity, it's also got to be a suitable alternative. You can't take someone who's super senior and go, we've complied with our obligations because you're on maternity and found you a role, if you're taking someone who's a senior exec and you drop them into a secretarial position. It's not a suitable alternative. And no. That's not what happened in that situation. That's me being facetious in terms of the comparator between someone who's very senior and dropping them in somewhere junior. But it's not enough just to find them a role. It's got to be a suitable alternative.
What is, you know, that suitable alternative term? Like, is that, are the rules for that on a company by company basis?
Yeah. So where you've got a situation, and this is something that there's a particular sector that I deal with around manufacturing, where they've closed one premises. I think they've been bought by another company. So they were moving.
Okay.
And it added, I think they were saying it was going to add 12 minutes to the commute.
Minor.
Which is, that sounds like, you know, the jobs were basically going to be the same terms and conditions, same pay, nothing was really changing other than this an extra 12 minutes on the commute. They had a staff member who didn't drive. And rather than it being a 20-minute bus ride for that person, because of the weird way that routes are set out in various parts of the country, it was actually going to add an hour to their commute.
Oh, heck.
Which is 2 hours in a day.
Long day.
There and back.
Yeah, long day.
So that's when you start to go, oh, actually, in this situation, so for everybody else on that shift, is a suitable alternative, they all drive.
Mm-hmm.
For this person, it's probably not.
Right.
So we do have to go case by case, which again can add complexity. I'm advising on one at the moment where we're not really sure if the alternatives are going to be suitable. And you're not really going to know till you get into consultation and you start talking to the staff about saying, well, look, these are some potential other roles that are available. What do you think? How does this sit with, you know, your current working lifestyle? Any business that approaches these situations where they've already made that decision over what's suitable and what's not without consulting the staff is going to end up in hot water. Because what you don't know is outside of work, if someone's got caring obligations, actually, if they have got a condition that they haven't disclosed and they manage with medication and they manage their life quite well, but then when something changes, it's going to disrupt things.
Mm-hmm.
If we go in that robust way and say, we've found these roles, they are suitable alternatives and we're not going to discuss individual circumstances, we are at risk in those situations, particularly if we're going to withhold redundancy payments if people say no to them.
Why would you want to work for someone like that anyway, with my argument?
It happens.
Ah, yeah. If someone said
the flip side is on this.
Go on.
For employees that can convince the employer that it's not a suitable alternative role, but I'm prepared to do it because I want a job and I need a job and I've got a mortgage to pay.
Money.
You still get the redundancy payment.
Good that.
So you get the job and the redundancy payment.
Good that. We did this last time, didn't we? Advising employees on how to swindle the way out of things.
Yeah.
Getting some new fans to listen.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to get trolled again.
Second question, mate. What should the consultation period look like? Are we allowed to pre-allocate roles to certain employees before others have been consulted?
So, provided we're not in collective consultation, so we're under 20 employees, we've got some freedom with what that consultation period looks like to some extent. So there's no statutory length of time that it needs to take. My minimum expectation as an advisor is that we do either a company announcement or a company email to explain the situation and that consultation will be starting and what areas of the business it's likely to impact. That then to those who are going to be potentially impacted and are likely to be brought into consultation, that they then get a personalized email as well, or personalized announcement with the information that they are going to need to be able to enter consultation. Consultation isn't just a meeting. The purpose is to have a discussion, to take people's views, to think about alternatives to the company plans. So those employees should be given potentially things like business plans, how much money the company is trying to save, if that's what they're trying to do, if they're trying to make things more efficient, how they think the new structure is going to do that, why it's necessary for them to remain competitive in the market or for business survival. So that then when that employee gets into the meeting, they can go, right, I've read all of this. Have you thought about doing this? I think this would save money. I think this would make us more efficient.
Okay.
And then you go away and you consider it.
Right.
And then you come back and you have a second meeting and you say, right, well, we've thought about what you've said and we've tried to see actually if we think we can make that work. We think some bits will, some bits won't, or if it won't, why it won't. So that is a true consultation where we are giving information, we're allowing them to have a say, we're considering what they say before we make a decision.
I didn't know it was like that.
Well, that's how it should go.
I've seen on Amazon there was an old series called The Consultant with...
I don't think that's about employment, is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really?
Christoph Waltz, yeah. He goes into a company. It's like I want to say the word woke company. It's like techie with like cool people and like they all, some of them even work with no shoes on. And he goes in with like a suit on. And for some reason he's got it never tells you why, he's got a really heavy right leg made out of metal or something. But he goes in and like has me, and they're all very unwilling to cooperate with him. He's an older, like, suited up, and they're all.
Sounds like a dreadful movie.
Series.
Series sounds like a
They're only half an hour episodes. So it's kind of like, you've got to stick with it a bit.
Right.
But it's like the subtext behind it.
It's giving me vibes of, what was that? What's the one that's on Apple? The one where there's...
Severance. Severance.
Oh, it's giving me Severance vibes, that I don't know why.
It's a bit like that. It's a bit disconnected.
Yeah.
Severance is a big, good metaphor for disconnection between employee and employer, you know?
What a tangent. Anyway.
Yeah, mega tangent.
Yeah. So I would expect as a minimum 2 meetings.
Okay.
And that's after the company announcement and after information has been given that we're in the meeting, we're explaining the situation, they've had the information so that they can engage in that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about timescales. This is how long we're going to be consulting for. This is potentially how much money we will be giving you if you're made redundant. These are the roles that we have available. Are you interested? Would you like to apply for any? Explaining what that process is. Is it interview or is it just that if not enough people apply for them, they just slot in? So what does all that look like? If you go into that first consultation, and this is a real pet hate of mine, it absolutely gets under my skin. Easy, 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 easy questions. Like, if I'm interested in a role, what happens next? When a manager goes, I don't know, I'll need to go and check and come back to you. You should be in that first meeting. Absolutely. Up to date with
knowing what's going on.
This is, yeah, that's great. If you want to apply for this role, I just take your interest. We'll send you an invitation for interview.
Mm-hmm.
Having someone in there who doesn't know what that process is or what happens if someone shows an interest in a role or how selection is going to be undertaken, it's not okay.
Why are they there?
Why are they there? You can't really consult if you've got two people who don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, innit?
So,
very awkward.
So that's first meeting. Second meeting, again, giving feedback on what the employer said, discussing why anything that they've suggested is or isn't workable. And ultimately, at the end of that meeting, again, I'm not a big fan of confirming necessarily at the end of that meeting. It's not fatal if you do. But at the very least, then saying you'll get your confirmation in writing with your calculations. But again, it shouldn't be the first time they see the calculations. All that should be visible when they're going into the meetings. Because if you've got someone who's potentially considering staying for a lesser paying role that isn't suitable, or they've got the option of redundancy, that needs to be an informed decision. So there should be lots of information going across. We don't really want to be withholding things during a consultation exercise. And then obviously once the decision's been made that we give that right of appeal.
From sounds of it, I'd want like a document. If it were me as an employee, I'd want like spreadsheet, you know, information.
Yeah.
Not just someone opposite me telling me yes and no. Straight.
And ideally, a policy, I mean, I know we bang on about it, it's very HR, isn't it? Having a policy around what will happen in redundancy and restructure so that it's mapped out, this is the process that we will follow if we're in this situation. Let's hope we never need it.
Mm.
But this is what you can expect in that situation. Now, the other sort of side of this is, you know, allocating roles and what we do about selection. And again, there's no fixed way that we have to do this. You can consult with everybody, say, and there's different ways that this happens. So it might be that, say, you've got 10 people doing 10 roles that are the same, and we decide we only want 7. Is that you could score those people, and the 3 who score the least, they're the ones that are going to be at risk.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got 7 people that you're not technically going to really disrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Or you've got the 10 and they're all going to be chucked out of their roles and everyone competes for those 7.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no specific way that you have to do it. It's just got to be fair and you've got to justify why you've taken that approach.
Okay.
So you could use interview processes. You could use, if you've been a company that reliably does your appraisals and your performance management right, you could use documentation that you've already got, or you can use a scoring matrix, which is a very, very fancy way of basically trying to apply scoring to your individual employees and giving them a ranking.
Mm-hmm.
So things that can be taken into account, usually things like disciplinary record, absence records, which is risky because if someone's got a disability and they're off more than other people, you're potentially going to be discriminating against people who are sick because we're scoring them less. So then you might need to handicap them, like in golf. Am I using that correctly?
Mate,
I
don't know anything about golf. Wrong person,
who knows?
Mate.
You know, where you give someone a basically a bit of a scoring advantage.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be how well they did in their appraisal. We could be ranking their skills. If it's output judged work, you know, how good their output is, their accuracy and things like that, and we score. And again, it needs to be visible. There's no point saying to someone, your score's 67.
Wow.
And they go, oh.
What do you mean?
I think that's out of 70. I'm doing well, but actually we're scoring them out of 1,000.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or how they rank compared to other people.
Visibility.
You want it's visibility. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we need to put the names of other people. You can anonymize.
Mm-hmm.
But really think, have I given this person enough information that they can fight their own corner? If I was in their seat, have I got enough to work with here that I can come into that consultation and say, it shouldn't be me because of?
Mm-hmm.
If we don't think we've given them enough information to be able to do that, it's probably not enough.
Could you potentially run into problems like in court for that?
Unfair dismissal.
Of course, yeah.
Because it's not a fair process. If we've essentially handcuffed someone to the point where they're sat in a consultation meeting going, I don't know why you're doing this. I don't know why the business is trying to achieve it. And I don't know why I'm bottom of the pile.
Mm.
It's not a fair process. They haven't been able to engage. So it's really, really important that we front load with that information and that we don't make decisions before the end of that process.
That would really confuse me.
Yeah.
It would. Like the whole, even when we were talking about consulting at the start of this, I was like, what are we on about here?
Mm-hmm.
Then I had to go back to the Amazon series and I kind of got it, you know. last one for HR questions. What is the cost of getting this wrong for employers and how can we avoid potential claims of discrimination during changes organisationally?
So it's quite wide ranging what can go wrong.
Okay.
We've got the standard kind of risk of unfair dismissal. Depending on how you're selecting and scoring, there could be that discriminatory risk as well. And particularly when we're talking around the maternity side of things as well. So those damages could be huge. You've also got the risk in terms of the numbers of people that are involved. So say you've got someone in a disciplinary situation, you're dealing with one employee.
Yep.
There's risk attached to that one employee.
Mm-hmm.
If you're making 15 people redundant, that's 15 times you could get this wrong.
Mm.
So the risk is heightened. And especially if you're doing it with inexperienced managers who are holding these meetings and don't really know what they're doing. It means you've got that risk 15-fold with someone at the helm who doesn't really know what they're doing.
Yeah, you're not in meeting with them all the time, I imagine. You can't be in every meeting.
So sometimes HR sit in, sometimes they don't. But particularly if you've got someone who either is going off book, they're not following the policy, or they've got this very old-fashioned view of, no, we keep the company information because all this stuff's confidential.
Mm.
You're onto a risk, really.
Have you seen some big numbers on this then? In your experience,
yeah.
You have.
Yeah, right, particularly okay. where there's maternity involved, you can be looking at hundreds of thousands of pounds.
Oh, heck.
Which is why, you know, in this situation, this person's got in touch is because it's high risk. They've got three people at risk of redundancy.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them are off on maternity. And so in this situation, we've got a bit of a reprieve because they've done things right,
mm-hmm.
in that they've recruited the maternity cover on a fixed term contract, and they've recruited the maternity cover on a fixed term contract.
Yes.
And the answer to the question really is, we need to try and find the person in the original role. We need to try and allocate them a role. If we can find alternative roles for the other two, great. I suspect they've done relatively well while they've been in maternity cover. They might be people that we want to retain in the business. But ultimately, we can make them redundant.
On fixed term contracts,
anyway. They're on fixed term contracts. There was never an expectation of long-term employment.
No.
If we're bringing that contract to an end early...
Do you owe them money?
Again, it depends on the wording of that contract. If they've been guaranteed a year's employment and that notice period isn't clear, and I do see this sometimes with fixed term contracts, is that they're old contracts that have gone out where there aren't notice periods, you could be on the hook for the salary for the entire period.
Right.
But don't just rule them out of consultation just because they're on a fixed term contract, because you could be missing out on some talent that you can place elsewhere in the business.
Never know. Do you get contracts where they're like, in this situation where it's like minimum 12 months? Would that be a term that's used?
It's unusual. Right. It tends to be capped at a maximum.
Right, okay.
There's no reason why you couldn't have a minimum, but then if it's open-ended, so minimum of 12 and then open-ended, it's essentially a permanent contract.
That's what I mean. I was thinking that would land people in trouble. That phrase.
I don't think it would necessarily get them in trouble. It's just, it's probably unnecessary wording.
Right. Really. Okay.
If there's a notice period, you're fine, as long as the notice period's clear enough to say,
right, okay.
Even though this is a minimum term, mm-hmm. we can terminate at any point by giving notice of whatever,
right, okay.
Which is why you want to...
But if it just said, like,
Minimum term. You
minimum
could be,
12 months.
Yeah, you could be on the hook for the...
They've literally got to work 12 months.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And it's why it's one of my things that I always spot when I get given contracts to review. Not on that so much, but often a notice provision will bite once someone has started work. So they're on the premises, it's day one, notices a month once you've started working for us.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've offered a contract, say 3 months before someone starts, they've signed the contract, yep, we're under contract, ready for you to start work. A pre-start notice period. Because if you don't have the relevant wording in, you can be in the situation where the full-blown notice period kicks in rather than the probationary period, because you haven't identified that period as different to the probationary period. So it sounds complex, but you can end up with people who have to be given huge notice periods if that role is being withdrawn, because we haven't specified if we need to withdraw the role before you start your notice, you won't be eligible for any notice.
The wording, I imagine, would be
complex. Very straightforward. Well, no, very straightforward.
Right.
That if we are in the position where we need to withdraw your role before you start, you won't be. Unfortunately, we won't be providing you with any notice.
But if you don't put that in your contract, you.
And then it depends on the wording of the actual notice provision. Because if it says during your probationary period, your notice is this. Outside of your probationary period, your notice is 6 months. Technically, if someone hasn't started work yet, they're not in their probationary period.
No, I back you on that. I'm big on like words and their meanings.
Yeah.
I've got an English degree. Yeah, employee questions, tangenting again. Can my manager or HR assign me to a role that I feel is unsuitable without me knowing?
They could, whether it's okay to do that. Probably not.
Yes.
So as we've said, you know, when we've been discussing suitable alternative roles, it should always be done in consultation. It could be that they've kind of penciled you in and gone, ooh, we found this. Think it'd be great for you.
Have a think about it.
That's a very different conversation to you are moving to this role and you have no say in it.
That's not a nice conversation.
No. Remember, human and human resources. I'm going to keep hammering this one. that we want to be making sure that we are engaging with the people that work for us. They have lives, they have personalities, they have other things going on outside of work. Nobody wants to be treated like a child and told you've got no say in this and we don't care about what you think, because that's a dreadful culture. So we want to be, if it is that we think actually this person's going to be a really good fit, well, that's the conversation that we have. We've penciled you in for this. We think you're going to be a great fit. This is why we want to retain you. And that's how we should be having the conversation.
I think in a lot of conversations like that, if the role's perhaps not ideal, but the conversation is very nice. Mm-hmm. You might swing the person around, you know?
How a difficult message is delivered can be hugely influential into you know, what happens with that outcome.
Mm. How you put that across is obviously going to depend on how it's received.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've got to sell it a little bit.
And again, I've talked about a lot of pet hates on this one. One of the things that I really don't like is when you know, we get recorded meetings and transcripts and things like that. Is where you listen to the manager delivering a difficult message for the employee that's going to have some pretty severe consequences for the employee, usually around job loss and things like that in difficult markets. And the manager's like, do you know how hard this is for me to tell you this? And it's like, no, it's not about you in this situation.
No.
This is not difficult. This isn't happening to you. It's happening to them.
Oh.
And it's a very easy thing to find yourself saying, and it's one of mine that always just inside thoughts.
I hate that.
Don't verbalize it.
Playing victim.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with
that. And sometimes it might not be. It's just they're just verbalizing, this is very difficult for me, but actually it's more difficult for the person over the other side of the table.
I mean, if they prefaced it with, I know it's hard for you, but I've had seven of these conversations.
Even more difficult for me. Do you know how upsetting this is? No, that's not.
Sure,
not a competition.
It's not about you.
No, it's about empathy for the person who's having to receive it.
Exactly. Not about the manager and in dollar at his expense. Final one as an employee. What are my rights in that situation? Can I sue for discrimination?
So in the situation, so in our current scenario, I suppose it depends on who's talking. If all three of them are just bumped out, there's no consultation, and we're going, well, they're off on maternity anyway, so we're just going to cut that role because clearly it's not needed. The chances are all three could sue you. If we do the consultation, we do it properly, we reallocate the original role, the other two fixed term contracts still included in consultation, we're still going to bring them in on those discussions, but we're referencing the fixed term contract, we're being proactive about looking for other roles, but unfortunately, employee number one is getting that priority. Then as much as it feels like a tightrope situation, unless someone has done something else that they shouldn't have done and not followed the procedure, it's unlikely that there'd be a discrimination claim.
Very straightforward then. Lessons learned. What emergency measures can HR departments take to prevent this sort of thing happening in future in the workplace? My brain just says, get your onboarding right. Recruitment.
Policies in place, I would say. Yeah, so onboarding so that we don't over-recruit and end up in a redundancy situation. But also make sure that you have a redundancy policy, that you know what's going to happen if you're in this situation. And before you kick off, if this is something that you're going to have to do, make sure your line managers know what they're doing. And don't just send them the policy, go read this and get started on the meetings. I'd almost be looking at, if you're HR, holding some workshops where you can take some Q&A with the managers, run through a couple of practice scenarios with them, do an FAQ. You know, you might be asked these questions. This is what is an appropriate or not an appropriate response to that.
Mm-hmm.
Also being clear on what those redundancy payouts are going to look like. So we've got within our system some great calculators, one of which is a redundancy calculator. So you can see actually what this exercise is going to cost you, but also so you can go into that meeting prepared with the figures and what the breakdown is in case any employees have got any questions.
Excellent. Get your numbers in check, people. Anything you want to add before we sign off?
No, I think we've covered a lot. That was quite a techie one.
Yeah, I'm knackered. I can't lie. A lot of talk about our numbers.
Lots of brain power, was it, in that one, Ollie?
Yeah, consultations are... I've never been involved in one.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it happen. I've never known anyone be involved in like a business restructure or anything, really. So it's all new to me. I might remember some of it in future.
Learn something every day.
Exactly.
Every day's a school day.
But yeah, thanks for listening. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers. Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER at heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier, and more productive workplaces.